here on First Up, the first stop in your busy day. It's Friday, and you know what that means. It's time for us to get in-depth with Alpha Raymond, and he's here on set with us. Good morning to you, Alpha Raymond.
Yes, ma'am. Good morning, Fazir.
What are you diving into today?
Good morning, Afra.
Well, although we try to escape it, it doesn't seem that the CL financial bailout is going to end its grip on the entire country anytime soon, and there have been some new developments which are complete shockers after last week. So we have to discuss some of those.
Let's put things in perspective.
Okay.
I mean, the first thing really is that we now have a number of competing claims. And it's interesting because claims is the phrase we use in insurance for somebody having a claim.
Yes.
The insurance company has a big check for me because I put in a claim. What are some of those claims? And who are the claims on? The claims are obviously on the Treasury. Whatever the talk is, the real bottom line is that the policyholders group would like the government to borrow money to satisfy their claims. And in fact, we need to put things in context, I think, in order to understand this entire issue. About 3 weeks ago, we had a situation where the offshore patrol vessel contract was cancelled by this government. And I believe that contract was either $3 billion or $5 billion, according to how you want to calculate it. But the reason for cancelling the contract, I understand, was that the sheer expense of it. The country couldn't afford $3 or $5 billion. And really, that, as far as I'm aware, that compromised the national security of this country in relation to the drug and arms trafficking and so on. It's affecting our society. We also had a situation in relation, it's going on right now, with the public service wage demands. It was in the newspaper all of this week, where in fact we are hearing that there's $3.9 billion is what will be the impact of the demands being made by the PSA, and the country can't afford that at this time, and the government has made a modest counter-proposal, and the thing is becoming fairly militant. There's a fair amount of marching going on. The bottom line being, the government position is that we can't afford to pay these claims, which are about $4 billion. We also had a situation 3 weeks ago in the newspaper, 2 weeks ago, I'm sorry, where Mr. Dukaran was featured on the front page of the Express and the Newsday, issuing an order to ministries that they should in fact restrain from any large projects because money was in short supply and so on. Mm-hmm. We have continuing difficulties in health and continuing difficulties in the police service and so on. And at the same time, we have a group, quite a small group of people, it's 15,000 people, demanding what is effectively $12 billion. So that is the context. People need to have that context so we could acquire an understanding about why this is so important. Okay, this is not a personal thing about Mr. Dupri and any individuals. This is a very important national issue, even if you never had anything with CLICO. And of course, the group's demands have shifted over the week. I mean, we had a demand, I think it was articulated last Sunday when they had a public meeting. They said they wanted 40% now. And then they wanted a rest in 5 to 7 years, and they wanted to get 5% interest on that. And really, nobody's offering 5% now. You know, I've written on that in the newspaper, and so no one is offering 5% now. It's 1%, it's 2%. That high interest strategy is exactly the thing that put the CL Financial Group under pressure. It's exactly the strategy that put the Hindu Credit Union Group under pressure. It's being executed by other financial agencies now. They are going to come under pressure too. And when I saw it, I just shook my head and said, you're gone back with that. We didn't learn, you know. The second option was one about bonds. We were being told about an American company. I think Fox is the name of the person involved with the company. We were told that our government should take $600 million US dollars and give to Fox, who deals in bonds and some sorts of fixed interest instruments on Wall Street. Fox would invest those things in US government bonds, and in 3 months' time would return to the government of Trinidad and Tobago $1.8 million US dollars. Now, of course, what that really was a promise to triple your money in 3 months' time, which is the same high-interest strategy that we just criticized. You know, so it made me smile, because as far as I'm concerned, if you really believe that's going to work, that's what was reported in the press, if the group really believes that's what's going to work, take the small money Mr. Dukaran is offering. Mr. Dukaran is offering you 65 cents on the dollar or 75 cents on the dollar. Take that money and you give it to Fox. And triple your money in 3 months' time, and let all of us have a nice time at Carnival. But don't take our treasury's money and give it to somebody for them to triple money in 3 months. That's not a real option. And of course, the third thing we heard, I think it was on this very show, there's a demand for capital, the return of their capital, a demand for their interest, together with a demand for 51% of the increase in asset values, if the value assets of the group
yes.
increase in value. So it appears that there's a sort of a ambiguity, to put it politely, in between whether the group wishes to be regarded as creditors people to whom money is owed, or shareholders. And there's a process. And Mr. Permel knows that. And Mr. Ramesh Maharaj knows it too. There's a process, an established process commercially and in law, to convert one's position from a position of debt into equity. So you give up your rights to interest and so on, and you say, okay, I'm taking X percent of the shares. It happened recently with Royal Bank shares and the International Finance Corporation, not Royal Bank, Guardian Life and International Finance Corporation. It happened there. And really, we need to be very alert to this question. There's also debates emerging about a Credit Suisse report and so on. I'm not intending to get into those debates. We need to have factual discussions. We need to get those accounts. We need to proceed on the basis of the facts if we are to make the right decision and to avoid the errors of the past. It's a big decision the country has to make. The policyholders group may have to adjust. The government may have to address. The entire country may have to go through an adjustment because of this huge misadventure. But if we're going through an adjustment, let us go through that adjustment on the basis of good, solid information, the accounts, a public discussion, the Steve Bideshi report, and so on. Let's do it that way.
Another interesting bit of information that came out, and we'll take a couple of calls in this segment in depth with AFRA 162241 extension 4, is the response from the central bank.
Indeed.
Because the policyholders, and especially Mr. Permel particularly, chastising the central bank governor last Sunday at Woodford Square.
Yes.
And we got a response from the central bank.
Well, that's a very interesting development because of course, one of the first points that came very clear in the last 10 days is that the apparent unity, which was apparent just after Mr. Duvaran read the budget on 8th of September, appears to have splintered. But that is the way with human beings, and it's also the way in our society, our particular society, in that there now appear to be three or four separate, I don't want to say factions, but different groupings operating. There's a grouping in which Mr. Ramesh Maharaj and Mr. Harald Sukan is associated. There's a grouping in which Mr. Permel is associated. There is another grouping with a man called, I think it's Tim, is
Solomon Hemley.
Solomon Hemley from San Fernando. There's a San Fernando agents group. And then, of course, there's another grouping represented by Dr. Claude Denbo, who is a senior counsel, eminent insurance lawyer, and so on. And, of course, here we have in yesterday's newspapers, full page advertisements published by the central bank, in which they are responding formally under central bank letterhead to the allegation of the contained in the letter by Ramesh Lawrence Maharaj. And of course, Ramesh Lawrence Maharaj is a seasoned campaigner, senior attorney at law. He got his views and his position put into the press very, very openly. So in fact, the country is familiar with what his position is, and the central bank is responding, and their response seems to be, I'm not an attorney, but from how I'm reading this, their response seems to be that they did not offer a blanket guarantee or anything like that. They said they would do their best. They gave assurances that they would do their best within what the government was offering. And at the moment, the government has changed what it's offering, and they are effectively bound to respond and to work with what the government is offering. This seems to be the position the central bank is taking, and it's going to be very interesting to see how this plays out, because it may end up in court. You know,
there have been calls for basically people have been calling for the head of the central bank governor and saying that it's the regulators who are at fault, and we have to blame the regulators for everything that happened. But apart from the regulators, I mean, to whom else should we direct our shouts and cries of off with his head?
Well, you see, it's a really interesting question, Jesse. I have no doubt the governor of the central bank and the inspector of financial institutions, and let us call them the responsible people, the people who are formally responsible in law under our system, have a heavy responsibility to bear. And from where I am sitting, it looks to me like they have some serious questions to answer. And in a lot of cases, they didn't do what they were supposed to do. It appears that way. Okay, when the Commission of Inquiry will bring out more of that. But there are other areas of responsibility. There are agents. We had him on this very set. Mr. Manny Lawrence was the sales director of CLICO at one time. There are agents who went out and persuaded people to take out your money from Scotia and take out your money from the unit trust and close off that account with Republic and put it all into one big sum of money. Let me put it in the EFPA for you. And that advice, that attempt of an agent, is contrary to good financial practice. So agents were behaving in a way. And I know that because they approached me personally. And many people looking at this show would know that. Agents were behaving in a way that was contrary to good financial advice, good financial practice. That is one area that needs looking at, and there's a portion of responsibility to be allocated there. There's also individuals who had responsibility in a wider sense. Some people in the credit union movement, people who are holding money for their family, some people are holding money in trust for large organizations who also distorted the investment guidelines of those organizations and put money, over-concentrated the money in one place. Just to give one example that was reported in the press, under their own press release of the 4th of February 2009, the National Gas Corporation, which in fact makes about $14 billion a year for the country selling gas overseas, and so they have a policy about where they put their money. In other words, not too much money here, not too much money there. Yet in their own press release, 4th of February 2009, under the hand of the president of NGC, Frank Lukin, he could actually explain that 1.47% of their money was in CL Financial, in one company. So it's easy for us to sit here and export and to say that, in fact, this person was too greedy and that person was too stupid. And some people in the media have been making that kind of comment about individuals who have found themselves in a terrible position here. I haven't. But really, if we're going to have that conversation, what about the National Gas Corporation? They have a professional board, they have professional advisors, and they found themselves at a point with nearly half of their money tied into one company, which is the reason that they're in court now with CIB about the bailout and so on, the wind-up.
Why is it that none of these people who saw this opportunity didn't think that it was too good to be true?
In 60 seconds.
Well, I think that is part of the human condition, Jesse May. But we live in a place where people believe, I suppose we try to believe the best about situations. And the last note I want to end up is that people are hopeful. People wish for the best for their families and for themselves. I just want to close off with a note that, in fact, this situation of over-ambitious offers to investors is still going on. The information is on my website, www.afroraymond.com. The information is there. It is tabulated. It is given in examples. It is going on now with financial institutions. People are taking money out of other places and investing into those institutions now that are offering 3 and 4 times the interest rate of everybody else. The same pattern continues.
So we're not learning that?
It does not appear so, but I am continuing to try. And thank you for the help.
Afroraymond, good to thank get you. Your perspective in depth with Afroraymond on a Friday morning. So there are so many others. We're talking about the storm on the way out in the Atlantic. Well, there's a storm brewing right now. It's reaching hurricanes, maybe stage 5 proportions with the CLECO issue. And as we're gathering, maybe some other cyclones developing in the region as well financially. Well, we're going to go to the latest at the top of the hour.